I've just posed this question in an Instagram video a few moments ago. How many more hashtags till we see change? The body of 40-year-old Andile Lulu Ntutela was found in a shallow grave in the backyard of the man who is now the main suspect in his murder. 2 weeks ago, 34-year-old Phamandla Khoza, his body was found in a ditch after he'd been stabbed and his throat had been slit. So in just 3 weeks, right, in the last 3 weeks, there have been at least four of these types of murders. And apart from their brutality, these men and women seem to have one more thing in common. They were all members of the LGBTIQ community. SANAC, the South African National AIDS Council's LGBTI sector, is calling for action and for hate crimes legislation to be given teeth to prevent these types of killings. Nontlantla Mkize sits on the SANAC LGBTI sector leader desk and joins us now on the line. Nontlantla, you and I are talking under really unfortunate circumstances, because being queer can be deadly in South Africa, can it not?
Good morning, Bongani, and good morning to the listeners at home. And indeed, it's a difficult time. It's a painful time. I mean, we are in Freedom Month, and we've just moved from what was what is known as a Human Rights Month. And yet, as you indicated, it hasn't been more than just 4 weeks that we've already found four of people that identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or even transgender are being brutally murdered, purely as far as we're concerned, but just who they are and who they choose to be in relationships with. It's a nightmare. It shouldn't be happening in a country like ours.
No, it shouldn't be happening in a country like ours because we have constitutional protections, someone might argue. Why are those not enough?
And that's the frustrating thing. It's we've got constitutional protection. It's we people that come from a history where we've understood and known how bloodshed is not good for us. And we've been people that made those commitments to say no more and never again. And I think that's why it is puzzling us that how could we be people now who not just do gender-based violence and femicide, but also adding on another pandemic labeled hate crime onto our list of misdemeanors or terrible human behaviors towards other human beings. It almost feels as though we've lost our sense of humanity, our sense of who am I as a person.
Yeah.
To give yourself the right to take a knife and stab another person 21 times is just beyond me.
I mean, these murders are violent, they are brutal. It's difficult to not see the hate behind them.
It's terrible. And I think the question in some of our minds, and I think it must be frustrating the investigating officers that have to go through such each time they do investigation, because it's not just I shot you or stabbed, it's not just that I hit you with a stone, it's you hit me, you rape me, you still burn my body, you still try and throw it in a ditch. It's so much. It's what has LGBTI or people that are in love with those of the same sex or those that live their lives differently to others, what really have they done to deserve such brutality?
Look, I've been, as a journalist, I've been covering gay murders in South Africa since the mid-2000s. I mean, I'll take you back to Sizakele Sikasa, right? To Salome Masua, right? Now, of course, Lindo Kuhle Cele. We get these hashtags until the next victim, but clearly more needs to be done. How would you like the law to be changed to deal with this?
Sure. So in the past, there's been quite a variety of crimes. One to the presidency, more so than various other government departments. And within that space, we got ourselves to have what is called the National Task Team on Hate Crime, a beautiful strategy of how we will tackle the concept of crime, from prevention to doing more education, to doing more campaign, to be visible. And I think that's where the frustration now is at, that pushes us to say perhaps when we have a legislation in our country that says this is what hate is defined as, and if you do something like this, this is how, through law, you'll be penalized, and basically use the justice system to sort of police people. It is not favorable. It's not what you would want. You do not necessarily want to use law to police how people live their lives. We've been there. We've come from that history. We do not want it anymore, but it's unfortunate that that's what we're calling on for now, to say, can we expedite the process of making sure that the prevention of hate crime and hate speech bill is fast-tracked, because we cannot be living in vain, wondering if I'm the one who's next, if I'm the one who the next hashtag is going to be on the name of.
You also want an offenders list. How would that help?
With the offenders list, the idea is, if we know the surveillance, and once again, it's all of these freedoms that have been taken away from people that we had fought so much for, and had so much bloodshed for. The understanding is that at least if we know who are the perpetrators, who are the commonly known suspects, then you do not walk around with a person or stay or live next to a person that is possibly your perpetrator. We have a lot of people that have been incubated in our homes as our uncles, as our fathers, and sometimes even as our mothers and aunts, that we do not know of. And the idea is, if you publish, if we get to know who is, then perhaps we can contribute to the prevention of these hate crimes, because then you know who your perpetrator is, even before they've done anything to you. It is not right. It is not ideal in a society like ours, but it's unfortunate that that's what we are now asking for.
Why is it that, because often these murders happen in broad daylight. These people are attacked sometimes in bars, at a tavern, for example. And yes, of course, some of them are hidden, but it would appear in some of these instances, the community, if not complicit, turned a blind eye. Why do people look away when this kind of thing happens?
I think that's the phenomena that is puzzling quite a number of us, from research, academia, all the way to activism. And we've seen it insofar as the concept of femicide, domestic violence, gender-based violence. We have become a community and a people that are just immune to these things happening in front of us. A person has been taken in front of you in a taxi rank or on a street. You turn your eye away. You look different direction. Somebody screams, you pretend like you did not hear anything. And I guess this is what we are wanting to be tackled insofar as our communities, that have more awareness, be on people's faces about, but how could you be on our families, be on media. What we watch on TV shouldn't just be soapies that are painting these beautiful love, dovey type of stories. Let the reality be there, hitting us hard, that we can't be these people. Perhaps the more we are shown back the brutality that we are giving to others, perhaps that would be the shock therapy that we need to turn our minds around. Again, it's unfortunate one uses those terms that are not supposed to be used in a country like ours today, but we're using them because we're just beyond ourselves understanding what would make a parent incubate a child that has raped a child next door, that has stabbed a daughter next door in front view of all the neighbors. And why are the neighbors not calling for justice in a space like that and making the parent to release their child? It just doesn't make sense. And I think we need to get to a point where we are angry as the people to say no more, not in our name, not in our community's names.
Absolutely. No more, not in our name. Nondla Damkhize, I appreciate your time there. The South African National AIDS Council's LGBTI sector leader on the line. Listen, homophobia kills. Homophobia is deadly in South Africa. It's not a joke. It's not a joke. People do these things because it is rooted in homophobia. This is deadly in South Africa. And we all need to stand up and say, not in my name.